every time now. Earl Foote, thanks. Big shout out to the Earl Foote and Arch, who provided our intro music. I think a lot of people don't know that, but Earl Foote, his father owned Little Earls back in the day.
Earl and Arch.
Earl and Arch, and you can download this song. Gloucester to the End. You can download it on gimmelive.com. Look for Earl and Arch. We got a great cast of characters here today with a former head of the chamber, worked at the chamber for 30 years, Mike Costello. Welcome, Mike.
Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here. We got Mrs. Grumpy Pants. She's back.
I liked my old name better.
Kim Smith. She's here. And Mr. Effervescent.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Toby Beck. Thank you very much.
Before you go, what was Little Earl's? Just for
us. Wow, you came here after. You totally dated yourself as a non-Gloucester person.
No, she's just young. That's all. She just
right. Yeah, right.
Next to where Halibut Point is, Kim, next to where Halibut Point is, the restaurant, building, and there was a nightclub.
Oh, okay.
Straight up nightclub. Yep. There's no other way to describe it. The way it was designed,
live music,
like discotheque, like a
metal floor,
lower dance floor with like railings that went down to the dance floor, sheeting all the way around it. Was it horseshoe bar? Or
yeah,
something?
And if you thought that Gus Foote was a character, you really needed to meet Earl.
He was.
Well, just the name Little Earls, was it named?
It was named after his son, Earl Foote, the Jr., who wrote that song.
Okay.
And he was a big, Earl Foote was a total character. He played in the Cape Ann Softball League for years.
Yes.
For years and years. I mean, even when he was old, he was a big pitcher.
He had owned Praddy's, actually, and got sold Praddy's and moved on to Little Earls.
And so when was Little Earls, when did it start?
Like, 70s, mid-70s, okay. Right?
Yeah, it was still in operation when I got here in 78.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how long it went after that.
They were sponsored. When I was playing Pee Wee football, they were Little Earl's Tigers. Also, you know, since then it's been West End Tigers, Little Earl's Tigers, now it's Hampton Hill Tigers. But total character. And
Well, thanks for letting us know.
Lost the history there.
And Gilligan, who recently went to his reward, who was a bartender, a well-known bartender at numerous locations, I think that's like where he began.
That was where he got started?
Got his start. If not, that's where he certainly got really well established as a local bartender.
Yeah, and people, it was a, so at this time, so you could, and I think a big part of the success of Little Earl's was at, there was a brief period of time when the drinking age was 18, and I think it was then.
Really?
I'm fairly certain that was the case, because I think, speaking to some older guys, they said that they saw some bands at Little Earl's, like the Fools played there, bands like that, and they saw them.
I wonder if any punk bands play.
I wonder if Tom.
Yeah. No.
I'd like to. You, Tom, Kim's husband, Tom Houck, was in the Atlantics. Interesting to hear if he knew about Little Earls.
Yeah.
From his Boston days.
Yeah, I'll ask him.
All right.
I'll ask him.
So what years were you and Tom? Was Tom at the peak of his music career?
The Atlantics was the band that he had the most success with, and that
was when.
Let's see, because I didn't know him when he had the Atlantics. So,
was it the 70s, mid-70s?
I think it was like 1976 to about 1983.
So it'd be interesting next time you talk to Tom, ask him if he knew about Little Earls.
Hello.
All right. Mike, getting back to yourself, what have you been up to? How long have you been retired now?
I retired in January of 2009. I can't believe it. So
it's been that long?
It's 6 years.
Yeah. The best speech I ever heard. I jumped to my feet after he completed his retirement party at Seaport Grill. Seaport Grill was open back then.
Yeah,
it must have recently opened.
Yeah,
it was Cruiseport.
Yeah. Right.
And huge crowd. And Mike got up, and this is his time to, you know, thank everyone, and you know, just talk about all the great things and everything. And he. You want to talk about it, Mike?
I went ballistic, I guess. I started talking about the people in Gloucester that were so negative and so pessimistic and had stopped so many developments over the years.
Wow.
And that it was time that Gloucester turned that mentality around and embraced change, embraced things happening on the waterfront and elsewhere. And I started naming people.
He did.
Gordon Beard hasn't forgiven me since.
Yeah, he did. And I was like, and I was sitting in my seat like this, like my hands are like this, and I was like, OMG, like this was.
I shouldn't have done it.
You regret it? You regret that?
I don't really regret it, but it was not appropriate for, you know, that should have been a thank you so much. It's been a, you know, a real hoop for
the 30 years before that, you had to bite your tongue.
Absolutely.
And it had to be frustrating.
Right. Absolutely. Oh my God.
And this was retirement from.
It was retirement for the chamber.
Being the head of the chamber for 30 years.
I was the executive director of the chamber.
For 30 years.
For 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he had a lot of pent up frustration. Because here's a guy that's trying to get Gloucester. At the you know, there was a long period of time where tourism is treated as a dirty word.
Absolutely.
In this town. Absolutely. Now it's being embraced because.
Right.
You know, a lot of people saw this, you know, what was happening to the fishing industry, the hyper-consolidation, and we're going through this hyper-consolidation, and at the same time, you have a lot of people saying, no, we have to save everything for the fishing industry because it's going to come back, and it's just, there's a handful of boats left.
Do you remember the time when Bruce Tobey was mayor and he actually came out and said that exactly what you just said? Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to move beyond. We got to save everything for the fishing industry when it comes back in 2008 or 2010 or 2014. I think he said it in a Boston Magazine piece, and he got slammed so badly from so many sides locally. He never said it again.
It was political suicide because you know they had this. Because you know why? Because the poor farmer and the poor fisherman is the easiest sell in the world. No matter even if these guys and I'm not saying these guys are hardworking people. I'm not saying that they didn't get screwed by the government or anything like that, and they deserve you know support and everything else. What I'm saying is both can coexist. Both have coexisted. During the heyday of the fishing industry, you had restaurants next to fishing houses, and they never. An example is.
A bowling alley next to a nightclub next to the fish flake.
Right, and the Gloucester House had always been next to Fisherman's Wharf. And
there were 2.5 times more rooms for rent, hotel rooms, inns, in the height of the fishing industry, at the day of the fishing, than exists today.
What we found was that there were so many parcels around the waterfront that were either underutilized or vacant, and the tax dollars that the city was taking in from what is considered the 100% value, the waterfront parcels, they were getting peanuts. They were getting nothing. Everybody went in for abatements. Everybody was getting a tax break. Parcels weren't being used. Joey sat on a task force we had at the chamber for I don't know how many years.
For 3 years, weekly, and we put together what we considered a win all the way around. Win for fishermen, win for the property owner, win for the tax base. And it was... The proposal that we put together, we actually put language in there for no condominiums because we just got that out of the way. Because we knew that these anti-people, was the easy way to attack.
Turn into condos.
Everything's going to turn into condos. Said no condos. We said that for any property, any piece of property along the waterfront that right now is a barren wasteland and doesn't have any kind of permitting on it, you could put recreational boating. As long as within that thing that right now there's nothing on, you made 20% of that space for commercial fishing boats.
Right.
So not only did you guarantee what was already commercial fishing stayed commercial fishing, but you increased more space for fishermen.
Right.
And we said, so alongside with that, the upland portions of the property could be developed into multi-use because
mixed use.
Yeah. Because mixed use. That allows the property owner to bring to a bank a proposal that they can get financing on so they can invest in their property. The property goes from a dump that they can't that they're not getting taxed much on to a property like what Sherry has done at Cruiseport, a $20 million property or something. Now you're getting taxed on $20 million as opposed to $750,000,
right?
And the jobs that get created and everything else.
Right.
To me, it's all the way around. It was a win for the fishermen. It was a win for the property owner. It was a win for the taxpayer, for the schools, so you could pay for the teachers. Right. You could pay to fix potholes. You could pay to keep fire stations open. And we presented it, and we got, and so, and then Sarah Garcia was there. She sat in on the committee. Yeah. She came, well, she wasn't officially on the committee, but she went to a lot of the meetings.
Yes. Yeah.
And when they came out with the plan, the harbor plan, after 3 years, and I went personally to every property owner, and they told me, you're wasting your time. They don't care about us. They only care about the fishermen. They don't care about the property owner. Nothing's going to come out of this, Joe. And I said to each one of these people, if we don't try, we only have ourselves to blame.
Right.
And I got them to and I got, and there was politicians showing up at our meetings and saying, yeah, we understand that makes sense and this, that, and the other thing. When the harbor plan came out, there wasn't one sentence of our 3 years of work reflected
hours and hours of effort.
And these are all business people that we're not just these anti-development people that are sitting around retired taking pot shots at us. We're the people that are making stuff happen on the waterfront, working our ass off 100 hours a week. And people came to these meetings, took away from their own businesses to go attend
and
these meetings
families.
And their families. Right. And go to the meetings with the Urban Harbors Institute and everything. Not one sentence made it into the harbor plan. Mm. I threw up my hands. I says, I'm never, ever going to another one of these meetings as long as I live. I've never been so disenfranchised. And because you know, I took it very personally too. Yeah. You know, I put my ass on the line with these people, and like I was up at night trying to think of all these things through. How can everybody win from this? You know, and like my stomach would churn at night when you hear like, you know, these anti-development people taking shots at you, like you're a sellout. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm trying to make things work for everybody.
And
you know, Bobby Gillis. There was so many people involved. It wasn't just me, but we had a group of very, very dynamic people.
Powerful people.
Yeah. And they just, boom.
In my 30 years at the chamber, if I were to list the two principal frustrations that I experienced, that would be one of them.
Yeah.
And the other one would be the complete inability of the city to deal with the I-4C-2 parcel.
Mm. Yeah.
When I first came to Gloucester, that was an empty parcel. It had been empty in 78. I think it had been empty for maybe 15 years before that.
Frank E. Davis Fisher.
I remember when they were building.
And nothing was happening. Mm-hmm. And in the early 80s, it must have been 81, I got Dick Silva to say, I'll put a task force together and we'll see what we can come up with. And they came up with a multi-use plan for the I-4C-2 parcel that would include a hotel, retail,
the Ramada, and
dockage for the fishermen, access to the waterfront, because that's required by DPA and all that. It was, you know, it was an incredible plan. They went out to bid with the plan. They had like six people that bid on it. The guy that won it. I can't remember.
It wasn't Linquata?
Oh, no. Linquata was before I got here. Oh,
okay.
The Ramada Inn project was the first project that was proposed, and I don't know what happened there. Yep. It fell through for some reason. But in this case, the guy took a look at things, and he concluded that he couldn't make the hotel work in that site.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Cohen.
Yeah.
He spoke with the guy.
He said he would never, ever, ever. Like he would spend a dime in the city again.
So he came up with the proposal of Gloucester Landing. Yep. They were going to put the Great Republic in the middle as a centerpiece.
It was incredible.
Retails.
On the sides. You could still see through to the paint factory. It was glass. So the ocean side was glass.
Yeah.
With the Great Republic hanging from the ceiling.
Went through the permitting process.
Yeah, parking
right up to the 11th hour.
Yeah.
Dick Silva retired as mayor. And Bill Squillis came in, and Bill was not supportive of the project. And there were some changes on the city council, and in the 11th hour, they pulled the plug from. And in the meantime,
and he gave away the waterfront property.
Had sued him along with Damon Cummings, and he got tied up in court. And so between the court case and the city getting lukewarm, the project just fell apart. But ever since then, too, I mean, there's been so much activity. And yet, what you wind up with is
nothing.
Is nothing, which is so frustrated. I mean, we're talking now over 50 years. So when I look at the Fuller School, I think the same thing. Is the city going to make the same mistake there that they made with the I-4C-2 parcel? Or are they going to get off their duff and respond to the interest that a number of people have, including the Y? The Y just asked me to join their board, and one of the reasons was they wanted me to get involved in the Fuller project. And it's a win-win situation. It's tax dollars. It's a place for the police and fire if they want it. It's a new home for the Y. You can keep the auditorium if a group wanted to come in and support the KPN Symphony and raise money.
We just talked about
KPN Symphony yesterday. Toby mentioned yesterday how it was so great to be able to have the KPN Symphony play, and Fuller was the great place for it. But
tremendous venue.
Yeah.
Whereas they played the other day over in Manchester, and it's a very mediocre venue.
The acoustics wasn't right. The acoustics at Fuller was great.
They were good.
And
so that could be saved as well. And two of the people that want to be involved in this project, you know, are Sam Park, who, whatever people want to say, he delivered a shopping plaza up there that didn't kill downtown, that added to the local economy, and Lee Delica from Wendover, who, two heavy hitters who want to be involved in this project, along with the Y, your local, you know, Y, which has 3,000 members or 5,000 members or whatever. That ought to be a no-brainer. That ought to be on a fast track somewhere.
I agree with you. I wish that they would trust. I wish they would trust the private sector a little more instead of everything. I feel like. I don't want to get myself in trouble. There are certain what do you call it? Feel good organizations, I'm gonna say, if you had to do with saving dolphins, okay, and you were a nonprofit, they will bend over backwards for you, give you money for cleanups and take barriers to getting your stuff done. But God forbid you were a for-profit business. It's like extortion. You know what I mean? What can we get out of these people? Instead of saying, what barriers can we remove out of making this project happen? And I felt
get it done sooner, faster.
I felt with Sherry with the hotel. What barriers can we take out of this so we can get this productive piece of property on the tax rolls at a huge thing there, provide jobs on this destitute piece of property, instead of, my mind is polar opposite. My mind would be, okay, what obstacles can we remove instead of what obstacles can we put in place?
I don't know if you saw this morning's Gloucester Daily Times, but there was a program yesterday over at Endicott at the, you know, in the Chamber Building, with I think his name is Bluestone, who did he's a consultant. He was a consultant to the city on economic development issues, and the headline in the paper this morning is, Bluestone addresses permitting issues. Looked at what are the impediments to economic development in Gloucester, and one of the first things that comes up is permitting. There is no fast track. There's only a muddy, deep rut that you get caught in and held up in, and most people at some point say, do I even want to continue with this process?
Well,
it is so aggravating.
To me as a small family business, right? People say, oh, why don't you do this, why don't you do that, right? Well, all these people, the anti-people, which, if I'm correct, they would say, we want small family businesses to be able to survive and to do things as opposed to these big, bad guys that are going to just make money, right? All they have done is ensure that the only people can do anything is the huge guys, because they're the only ones that have the pockets deep enough to fight these very same people that say they want the small people to do stuff. Because there's no way I'm putting my ass or my family's ass on the line to go through the process. $250,000 worth of engineering and architectural plans for them to say, oh, there's a shadow that's going to be on the street. Okay, 6 months. We got to go 6 months out now. We'll table this, go redesign your whole thing, spend another $250,000 on your plans, and come see me in 6 months. Meanwhile, you have $2 million in financing rolling over every month coming at you. Okay, you come back with a plan in 6 months, and they say, oh, well, you know, we don't like the, we think that the seagrass is going to be displaced over there, so we're going to have to get a couple, you're going to have to pay for a couple more studies to prove we're not going to displace any seagrass. We'll see you in 6 months. $2 million rolling over for another 6 months. How are we going to fight that battle? It ain't going to happen.
Why don't you tell us what you really think?
I know, Mike. Who got me started on this?
I think I
did. Who the hell got me started on this? Jesus, I don't even want to talk about this stuff. I like my life.
It
not.
Is so
I like. Remember, I said I'm like I'm done with all this after the, because when they didn't listen to us the first time when we put that reasonable proposal together, like I'm done. Like this is, I don't want to talk about it anymore. So there you go.
There's been a lot of beautiful things that we can get them.
Yeah, no, let's not get me started. Please, let's not get me started. So what is let's not talk about negative.
No.
I'm rubbing my forehead right now. Mike, what were some of your proudest, we talked about some of your frustrations. Why don't we talk about some of your proudest moments at the chamber and what some of the great things that happened? Festival.
There were a lot of good things. Festivals. I mean, we started... endless numbers of festivals: the Schooner Festival, the Waterfront Festival, the Clam Fest, Christmas celebrations. I still remember in my first year here, there was the Fiesta, and then there was summer, and there was nothing during the summer.
A Horrible Parade.
Horrible Parade, and then the 4th of July, Fiesta, 4th of July. Labor Day.
Yep.
And that was it.
Nothing in between.
And there was nothing in between. And so, you know, we created 3 or 4 festivals to just go in between. Sidewalk Bazaar is a huge event. The Waterfront Festival, the Schooner Festival, events in other communities.
I remember when Charlotte festivals. DeWitt came and made a proposal.
Charlotte, oh my goodness.
For the Waterfront Festival.
She was the developer of the Waterfront Festival idea. And that thing, I mean, that's such a home run. It's like in its 30th year now, something like that. So the festivals are good. We played the chamber played a large role in the development of the Blackburn Industrial Park way back in the day.
John McNiff.
People take it for granted now that all those buildings are up there and those companies are there employing several thousand. There are far more people employed in the Blackburn Industrial Park than are employed on the waterfront. But I don't want to make that point that, you know, Gloucester's a multi-diversity kind of city. The economy is not one horse, which people would like to think. It's many horses, and there's lots of industrial jobs up there that are high-paying, good jobs, and have kept people in Gloucester, kept kids in Gloucester.
And there's some now that are in the fish industry that are up there.
That's correct.
What I think is funny, too, is they always include Gorton's in the numbers for the fishing industry.
Yeah.
It's a manufacturing company product that doesn't come from Gloucester. God bless Gorton's.
Right.
This is not... Gorton's hugely important to Gloucester and everything else, but... should not be included in the fishing industry jobs in this town because it's a manufacturing company.
Well, they're not in the wet fish business, right?
They're not in the wet fish. The fish doesn't come from here.
Right.
It doesn't get offloaded in our harbor anymore. They don't come. They're not coming in. The freight business is gone.
Yeah.
That what do you call that? Container? No, it's not container. It's
the stevedoring.
The stevedoring is non-existent. Those offices
and
are frozen.
Freight rail, which got cut off.
Freight rail is gone. So those numbers get lumped in to like the financial impact of Gloucester totally misleading.
Yeah, it is. I think a couple of things that I really am so proud of is the regional aspect of the chamber. We work very, very hard on that over the years. So it's not just the Gloucester Chamber, which everybody used to think.
Essex.
And would tick off people who would come to meetings or whatever from Essex or Rockport or Manchester, and they think, you ever going to talk about any issue that relates to us or things that are across the board issues that are truly regional issues? So we work very, very hard at that. And we strengthened each of those divisions, and the numbers grew as we paid attention to them. The membership grew dramatically in the three towns. It always has been strong. Well, it hasn't always been strong in Gloucester. When I first got to Gloucester in 78, there were 200 members of the chamber. And it was pretty much a Gloucester organization. And when I left, there were 1,100 members, and we were spread out all over the region. And the nicest part, I think, is the people. The people who somehow, you know, they drank the Kool-Aid, they loved the chamber, they liked the thought that we were moving forward, that we were making progress, that we were doing good things. It wasn't just a business organization, as you were saying earlier, that's out for them, you know, huge profits and all of that. We were doing so many community things. We started the Business Education Collaborative to work with the schools. We had a Government Affairs Caucus to deal with government entities all across the board. We were doing a lot more than just running a sidewalk bazaar and publishing a tourist brochure. We were a very, very sophisticated organization with a great staff, and the friendships that I made, I mean, I still have them.
Of course,
still,
yeah.
People are very, very close. I'm so grateful to all of the people over the years who gave time and effort and money and the whole nine yards to the chamber, because it's a great organization. And
so how do you feel about it now?
Like it went through some tough years, yep. some very tough years. And some of that was the economy. I retired right at a point when the economy was about as bad as, you know, 2009. Oh, it was a tough time. Mm-hmm. So the guy that came in was dealing with an economic situation that wasn't great. But the chamber, it had about 4 years, they're on their third director since I left, mm-hmm. in 6 years. I think the new guy is terrific. He's from Essex. He's a local guy, so he's not looking for his next chamber job somewhere else. The second guy was a chamber guy, Robert Height. He came from Austin, Texas, and he was here for about a year and a half.
Yep.
And I think he was looking for his next job as he was here. And that happens within the profession. Mm-hmm. It was just a little too quick in this case. But the new guy, he's committed. He's got some business experience. He's working hard. He's pared the staff down because the numbers of the membership now is around 750, something like that. Mm-hmm. There's a drive that they're planning in May, which I'm going to participate in. You know, you get in a boiler room and you get on the phone, you call people and you twist their arms and you get them to join the chamber. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be an easy sell because I think people are beginning to see that the chamber is doing things again. Ken Reel is the director's name, and he's brought in a good staff, and they're putting programs back together that sort of disintegrated after my departure. There's a lot of programs that were given up. One of the areas that they really know they have to concentrate on is downtown Gloucester, because downtown Gloucester is pretty much given up on the retail communities, gave up on the chamber under the previous leadership. Mm-hmm. So I think they need to focus on that. Ken knows that. And they're going to work really hard to gain the confidence of Main Street again, because in the years that I was at the chamber, I was a retail kind of guy, and almost everybody on Main Street was a member of the chamber. It wasn't a problem. It wasn't an issue, and they were very supportive. We were doing a lot of things, running a lot of programs for them, and I think that can be brought back. But so there's a lot of room for growth at this point, and I think that Ken will take it in the right direction.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. My theory on the chamber has always been that if the business community, Gloucester is a, I can see good in liberals and I can see good in conservatives, but this is a liberal town, and you have to recognize it's a liberal town, and I feel like as a business community, that if you don't have a group speaking for you, some numbers as business people, that every time there's something comes down the pipe, the onus going to be placed on businesses or on the rest of the it's going to come down with a stroke of a pen that could hugely impact businesses. That some people that make these decisions don't realize, so you need to have a unified voice. And that's what, to me, I may not see I may not be able to put into numbers the direct benefit to Captain Joe and Sons for what the chamber provides me. I don't know that I get direct referrals that translate into lobster sales from the chamber. But what I do know is, as a group, as a lobbying group, I need a voice, or we're gonna get run roughshod over. Yeah. And
well, the best example of that is the tax classification discussion that goes on
every single year. Yeah,
the business community is about 11% of the tax base of Gloucester. The residential community is 89%. There are councilors who would like the 11% of the business community to pay extra taxes to help out those 89%. You can't do it. The numbers are too staggering on the residential side. So they want to shift the tax burden over to the business community. And that was one of the classic issues that the chamber fought every single year, really hard for fairness. There's no reason why everybody shouldn't be taxed the same. Right. There's no reason why the business community should be, and they still are, but it's minimal. It's really minimal, and they should eliminate it because it really doesn't make that much difference in giving residents a break. A lot of people don't understand the issue, but the basic of it is just what you're saying.
Yeah.
That the mentality is, let's get the business community to pick up some of the extra burden here.
Yeah, Mike,
the small struggling business.
Yeah, that's it.
Being involved for years, you must have seen lots of different proposals for rerouting Main Street, the parking meters on Main Street. Now we just went had this because. We had this terrible, terrible winter with the snow banks and everything else.
The blizzards.
Mayor. What are we supposed to call her now?
Mayor Romeo Thicken.
sorry. She did this thing to. We're going to relieve the downtown merchants from paying. I mean, not the merchants, but the
customers.
Tolls. We're not going to have tolls in the parking meters.
Right.
And
the parking meters are off for 2 weeks.
They're off for a couple weeks, and they have orange bags over them. Says free parking, courtesy of the city.
Yeah.
Now, from my experience, I have no problem parking on Roger Street or Middle Street. And a lot of people, when there wasn't this free parking free tolls, would tell you. I can never find a parking spot on Main Street. And before this, I seemed like I could always. It never was a big deal to me because I could always find a spot on Middle or. But it seems like
within a block.
Within a block, I could always find a parking spot. But it seems with this experiment almost that there's a lot. I think that there's a lot of employees of stores that are just
and they were asked
getting there at 9 o'clock in the morning, leaving their car there, parking all day long.
Right.
And there's been times where I've driven 5 and 6 times around Middle, Rogers, and Main, and not been able to find a parking spot in the last couple of weeks during this thing.
The past, the city councils and mayors would come to the chamber and say, we want to offer free parking like for the week of Christmas. Or the month of December.
He did that in Rockport.
Absolutely. And we always refused. Always refused. Rockport is a completely different animal than Gloucester. In Gloucester, the problem is sometimes it's the employees, but it's also the downtown is made up of so many different businesses. Many of those businesses are not traffic dependent. It's not like they're a retail operation on the first floor. And so they have less regard for abusing something like this. And I've heard stories in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. At the start, it was great. And now, it's a problem.
Right.
Because employees and other businesses, unrelated to the retail operation. So in the long run, I always felt you're not doing the retail community any favor. They need turnover.
Yeah.
They need turnover. And that's what the meter does. It's a 1 hour or 2 hour meter. It's going to turn traffic over. And if someone is meter feeding, then they should be tagged for it. I don't think there's ever been a system that any police department, and I don't fault the current police department at all, there's no system that they can put in place where they're going to be able to catch this kind of abuse. They might do it once in a while, but not to the extent that people are abusing the privilege.
I'll tell you, when Salem put in that huge parking garage close to their downtown, within 2 or 3 years, I think there was incredible number of restaurants that opened up shop, like as a direct result of this huge parking lot.
People said it was going to be a white elephant, that it wasn't going to work. It's full.
It's full.
All the time.
It's full.
All the time.
And so is it the lot behind it. The open air lot.
So if the YMCA got to move to Fuller,
right.
That building, I don't know if there's enough space there, but it seems like it would be a great place for a parking lot. Is there?
People have talked about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No. So that
one of the possible uses, a parking facility.
It seems to me. I don't know, but you're right there downtown.
Right.
Well, you look at that combination of major facilities close together.
Right.
You got the library. City Hall, the temple, the YMCA, and there's no parking.
No.
And if anybody's got parking, they put their arms around it and say nobody else can come in here.
It's pretty scary.
Well, one thing I heard from the merchants was they were real, you know, they've all been hit so hard, and they, and it was because of the lack of snow removal initially. And so the merchants that I've spoken to have said to me, gee, I wish that that we had such a bad winter. I wish the snow removal had happened right away, that it took a while for it to happen.
You know something? I can't fault, I'm not going to fault.
No, it's, but I
think that who wouldn't have wanted it to be removed right away? But this was unprecedented.
Absolutely.
They got to have a pass. Yeah. The DPW did everything in their power.
I
understand what you're saying, but like a lot of those downtown merchants, like, are not pleasable. I'm just going to tell you right now, like they are just not pleasable. I'm not going to say, like I love them, but like I remember dealing with, I remember there was a squabble about who was going to take over the sidewalk bazaar. And a lot of the downtown merchants were screaming because the chain was like, you know what? We have so few members that are actually members of the chamber that are downtown merchants that you know, we're going to have let someone else take over they can run the downtown merchant group can run their own bazaar,
right?
And the people that were screaming the most about the chamber giving up on doing the sidewalk bazaar anymore were not paying to be chamber members.
Wow.
I was scratching my head, like, are you serious right now? So, anyway.
Don't get me started.
No, I don't expect you too much. But I think that there's a lot of, we expect, you know, this to happen and this to happen and this to happen. But, you know, in their defense, this downtown group has been doing a lot of planning for themselves. They have a pretty strong group of people. The people like the Toodaloo's people, Julie Tatone at Life is Good, Mario at TBT Post.
And the Pop Gallery people.
Pop Gallery people. Right. There's a core of really, really intensely people that do put forth a lot of effort. I'm not trying to lump everybody together, but some of the worst rabble-rousers are the last ones to say, okay, I will do this to help the cause, is the only point.
Absolutely.
I'm not painting everybody with that brush, but the people that know who they're doing so much work already would not take offense to what I just said, I don't believe. And the people that maybe want to think about if they are bitching all the time and not contributing, maybe they want to talk about helping out the people that are doing the work. Like that downtown merchant group, lend them a hand.
Lend them a hand,
There you go. Mike, where do you stand on the, now we're a couple years in on the windmills.
Yes.
Where do you stand on the windmills?
Fabulous.
All in.
Fabulous.
Right? All in.
Oh, absolutely.
Were you like that from the start?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't anti them at the start, but I was unconvinced. And I said before they went in, I said, because they make promises, you know, and they say, oh, we're going to get this much, we're projected to get this much money back.
Sure.
And I says, when I see that, if that's true, if it's true, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, I saw I think it was Mayor Kirk at the time, sent me a photo of the first check from National Grid for $220,000for the first quarter. And I'm like, I'm in.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
It also cemented the relationship between the city and the industrial park at Gloucester Engineering and Varian. I mean, and that's an important bond because those people are important to the future of Gloucester.
Yep.
And I must admit, when I first saw him go up, I went,
Ooh, big.
Yeah, and then I'd see them from different vantage points in the city. You know, you'd look up and there they are. I'm used to them. Doesn't bother me.
I was all in from.
You were of course you were. You're Mrs. Green, liberal pants.
No, but I am from a political standpoint too, because I feel like New England gets most of its electricity from coal. From coal burning facilities, and coal is so bad for the environment. You know, it's just such a terrible. And so, why are we expecting other parts of the country to support us electrically?
I have a post. It's in the works, but I just read this article that France just signed a thing that any new commercial building has to have one of two things on their roof: green space like a blanket of green space for insulation and other type of benefits, or solar. One or the other, mandatory for new construction. How cool, I mean, that is pretty intense. That is pretty cool. Pretty cool, right?
They're not messing around.
They're not messing around. Boom, right there, right? And okay, Toby, we didn't ask you, how do you, where's your take, what's your take?
I'm in favor of anything. I shouldn't say, I don't want to go and say anything, but I hate being dependent upon foreign oil,
not just domestic coal.
Yeah. I think that politically too often decisions get made, based upon our dependence on international oil supply, and anything that will,
breaks that chain.
My stance has always been, I'm all in on it as long as it makes financial sense. I don't want politicians to say they're gonna put up a windmill for $75 million, wind farm for $75 million that's gonna return you $2 million. But when I started seeing like this stuff is getting more and more efficient, mm-hmm. and electricity prices costs are going up, so right. So now if you say this makes financial sense and on top of that, we're getting this green benefit and less reliant on the net. Now I'm all in. Mm. Before, if it was just like a way to swindle taxpayers and funnel it into, swindle people's taxpayers' money, but I don't feel like that's the case anymore.
I think it's been a win-win for the city. And the aesthetics there is something that, it's also become something of an attraction.
I agree.
You can go, it's not just here. I mean, absolutely. You can drive up in Maine or up in Vermont. There's certain beautiful mountain areas, and all of a sudden there's...
Yes, windmills on top.
Yeah, the wind turbines, yeah.
I have a cottage on Newfound Lake in New Hampshire, and there's a proposal to put windmills coming right down the mountain range right beside the lake, and there are a lot of groups fighting it.
Oh, sure.
A lot of groups.
Yeah. I think that there should be some certain places that get... have unspoiled vistas. I don't know. I don't want them just anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want them just anywhere.
No, well, it's just, but I tell you the same thing is you want your cell phone to work.
Yeah.
Okay, as you're traveling about New England.
Yeah. I'm all in on the cell phone tower in West Gloucester, just in case you're wondering. All in. Oh. I can't stand dropping my calls in West Gloucester.
That's my point. That's
all in.
If you think it's just West Gloucester, trust me, go to Maine, go to Vermont. I mean, I have friends of mine that call it radio-free Vermont because it doesn't matter who your supplier is. There's no cell phone that works up there.
Jesus.
Well, I mean, I think there's enough places I think there are enough places for wind turbines that they don't have to spoil really beautiful areas either.
Well, the guy that was a big Texas oil man that wanted to create in the Midwest huge...
I know who you're talking about.
Was it Pickens? Pickens?
Yeah. T-Bone Pickens.
He was an oil man, but he said, there's no money in oil right now, but there's money in this.
Yeah. Well, I think they're also those guys are smart enough to navigate. He might be one of these guys that is going to benefit from this political.
For sure.
Because I think there's a mandate but I don't know if it was Obama and I don't want to get into the politics of it all, but I think there has been a mandate that says, each electric company, a supplier or something, has to have X amount. I don't know what it is. I don't want to sound like an idiot. That goes into renewable energy.
Right.
So much of your...
renewable sources.
Source. Okay. I don't want to butcher
this. Whether it's solar or...
So there's a huge push to get people into this stuff, right. And there's a lot of incentives. Yeah.
It sounds like in France that they've done the same thing.
You
want to build a new building? Here are the rules.
Right.
There you go. Well, yeah, and they also have that huge tax on... a gallon, a liter of gas or something is some ungodly number, and because they want people to use public transportation.
And,
it's a way to manage people.
And build smaller cars.
In Italy it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's all little clown cars. But that makes sense.
It makes sense.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I'm really happy with this. Oh, we want to talk about Cacciatore's opening this weekend.
Saturday, 4 p.m., according to their Facebook page.
This is it?
This is it. They've gotten all the permitting from the city.
There's been a flurry. There's like 15 vans in their parking lot right now.
They let me know. They reached out to me and let me know personally, but they have a Facebook page, and it is posted on the Facebook page, so it's not a GMG exclusive, but the fact that they reached out to us showed that
they really... We've been following this from the start.
Right, yeah, that they appreciated what support we've given them. And the two brothers, you know, good for them. I mean, this is an evolution in their careers. They've been working in the food service industry, you know, for a number of years now, to maybe have a realization and get their own place.
Right, pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So it's Saturday for lunch.
Saturday, 4 p.m.
4 p.m.
Oh, okay. 4 p.m. Okay. It's going to be mobbed.
It will be mobbed. And so they'll have to figure out how they can deal with it.
That's good. We want them to be mobbed. Mob the place. We want them to get, you know, there has been a stream of construction, you know, people there for a long time. We really support them. Let them get some of their money back.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they've had delays because they've indicated that the local inspectors have insisted on
certain upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
You know.
All right. Well, there you go. We got another. Anybody have anything to add? No? We're good? No. Another Gloucester cast. We're banging them out. I love it. Mike Costello, thanks for being our guest today.
My pleasure.
Cam and Toby, as always.
Tons of fun.